White Rocket Entertainment.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
A miracle in Jordan Hare! A miracle in Jordan Hare!
We welcome you to Jordan Hare Stadium for tonight's game.
Chris Davis takes it in the back of the end zone.
Let's watch some football. Now everybody. Come on, everybody.
They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yo, yo, yo. Let's watch some football.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the WarEagleReader.com. and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. And now brought to you by our newest sponsor, Ken Ringer's Book Tour for Lorendo. More about that later. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, we have a special feature tonight that we're going to kick the show off with, do we not?
We do. We have a special guest joining us tonight.
Yes.
Known mostly by his name on the internet as War Room Eagle.
Yes, War Room Eagle. Welcome aboard the show, War.
Hey, Van. Hey, John. How's it going?
We are so glad to have you on. All right, so we're going to have some deep diving into the nitty-gritty of the football, offensive football, and Gus Malzahn football. Is that correct?
That's right. That's what I've been writing about for the past 3 years, so maybe I know a thing or two.
Excellent. All right. So we're going to do that, and we're going to talk to you here, right here, to start with. And then after we are done, John and I have a few other things to kind of discuss, and we'll wrap up for tonight. So let us go ahead and dig around into the brain of the great War Room Eagle. John, why don't you kick things off? You have put some deep thought into what we're going to talk about.
Okay, sure. David, I really enjoy your work at College of Magnolia, and it's really interesting to see you break down the offensive plays and the schemes and what they're trying to do in certain games. And I guess the first question is, how did you get into this? How did you get into the Malzahn offense and understanding it and breaking it down for other people?
Well, I guess I kind of came to be interested in it at just the right time. What happened is, you know, I'm sure a lot of people have heard of Chris Brown, the author at smartfootball.com. Mm-hmm. He'd been writing for a few years before I discovered his website, but once I did discover that, it was just like a completely new way to look at football, for me anyway, having never played a snap, don't tell anybody. and so that was really interesting stuff. But what I mean by it being perfect timing was there was a period last, you know, 3 or 4 years where some playbooks have made their way online, even some All 22 video have made their way online, and that's just been a really good resource for really digging into Malzahn's offense as a whole. And then with the ability to download games and study them on YouTube or whatever, that's just made things a lot easier. So if this had happened, you know, if my interest in this had come about 10 years ago, it probably wouldn't have flourished like it has, but I really just lucked into the timing, I guess you'd say.
Right.
All right, so we're going to start out and talk a little bit about, you know, last year, and then we're going to talk about some off-season stuff and then some stuff for this fall and what we think is going to happen. So my first question for you about last year is, in terms of percentages, what percentage of the offense's problems in 2015 were like game planning, play calling kind of stuff? What percentage was player execution on the field, and what percentage was lack of really good players at key positions?
Percentages. The play calling, I tend to give coaches the benefit of the doubt just because I feel like they're smarter than I am when it comes to, you know, coaching the game of football. So I try to give them the benefit of the doubt, but when things continue a certain way for an entire season, you do expect some adjustments. You hate to keep seeing the coaches just banging their heads up against the wall trying the same things and the same things happen, you know. So I hesitate to throw a lot of blame on them, but there was that as you get towards the end of the season. Honestly, I think a lot of it was the lack of talent at wide receiver. And I know we thought we had, you know, some talented senior wide receivers last year. But one of them clearly wasn't interested to play very much. And then, you know, was out off the team before the halfway mark in Duke Williams. And the other two, Ricardo Lewis and Melvin Ray, the other two seniors. And Ricardo Lewis did his best, but he was by himself. And I don't think any receiver in this offense can really be a game changer on his own. And then, you know, Melvin Ray had his moments, but he wasn't a game breaker. He wasn't one to take the top off the offense. So we really didn't have a player that could play that Darvin Adams or that Sammy Coates role. And I think that really stifled the offense. And so I'd say at least 50% of it was just a lack of talent or ability or whatever you'd want to call it especially at the wide receiver position.
You know, if you talk about player execution, there were times last season as far as the receivers go that I was definitely in favor of it.
David, the other thing, position I think about when you say that is I think running back. I mean, I like Peyton Barber and he's a really good guy and stuff, but he is the least talented running back that we've had carry the ball a lot since, you know, I don't know when.
Post Cadillac, probably somewhere in there. Post Irons.
No, I mean, I'm saying he's the least talented running back since well before that.
No, I'm saying there was a period around, 06, 07, somewhere in there, that we probably didn't have much better than we had last year.
Maybe. All right, so my next question is, I really liked you did an article about Herb Hand and the way he coaches offensive line, and I know that he and Gus have a history together, and he has a really good exposure to, like, the West Virginia offense, so... Mm-hmm. What kind of influence do you think he'll have on the offense this season, both as the offensive line coach and as somebody else that Gus trusts that he can bounce ideas off of?
Yeah, so I've one of the things I've been able to get my hands on has been a lot of Tulsa video from 2008 when Herb Hand and Gus Malzahn were basically co-offensive coordinators. And, watching those offenses, one thing that really sticks out to me is the inclusion of a play called outside zone, and it's a lot like inside zone, which Auburn has run since Malzahn's been there, probably before that, but that's when I really started paying attention. Outside zone is similar, but it's obviously the running back is aiming outside the tackles, and that's not been part of the playbook since Malzahn came to Auburn, but it is another play. It's effective. It's not that different from inside zone that it's like hard to add to the playbook or anything like that. So I would expect to see new running plays maybe be added. I would be excited to see that. And that's one of the things I think might have been a problem last year. So when Nick Marshall was there, he's a quarterback, but he can run. They had a lot of interesting ways to run the ball with him at quarterback. Everybody's familiar with the zone read and, you know, the packaged plays, the play option or whatever you want to call them, where you basically the triple option, you know, the late pass to Sammy Coates or the, you know, anything like that. They had a lot of different add-ons and adjustments for their running game when Nick was at quarterback. When they lost Nick Marshall, they had to take a lot of that out and go back to more of a vanilla run game, and I was kind of disappointed in that. They weren't able to mix up the run game. It was just very straightforward, a sweep here, a sweep there, just really basic. And I'm hoping that with the addition of Herb Hand, Malzahn can add some more variety to the run game, have the offensive linemen learning a few more techniques, maybe even having more than just the guards pull. You know, in other offenses, sometimes centers pull, tackles pull. You can do a lot of things if you just take the time to teach it. And maybe Herb Hand's the guy that can do that.
He's going to be like the drive-through bank teller lady in the old Pat Dye commercial. You guys remember that? Where Pat Dye bank commercial, and he opens up the thing that comes through the tube, and he's got his money in it, and then it's got like a piece of paper, and he's like, "It's a play coach for you. It's a play coach. Play for you, coach." And Pat Dye's like, "Let you pull the tackle instead of the guard." And she's like, "Yeah, try it out." Lord, I mean, you know, Pat Dye was going to the bank teller to get play calls. So hopefully Herb Hand will have a little more creativity. Well, John was talking about, and you were talking about stuff that might be added. Now, I think for the last two seasons, John and I have been hoping that there was a play or two that they would take out of the playbook. And I'm going to go ahead and jump his next question because you kind of led into this really well. The jet sweep, okay, the Ontario McCaleb sweep,
mm-hmm.
It's so great. It beat LSU, right? It beat LSU in 2010. And then as soon as McCaleb left, it kind of left town with him, and nobody's been able to run it effectively other than maybe we were calling it Ricardo Lewis doing the power sweep instead of the jet sweep there. Mm-hmm. In terms of a speed sweep, nobody's been able to do it. What even though Corey Grant was so fast. So what do you think is wrong with that play? Will they keep trying to use it, and what will happen?
Yeah, that play serves two purposes. One is it serves as a decoy for running up the middle, and it can be pretty effective at that. I know that especially in 2013, there were a lot of plays where Trey Mason just had this giant hole up the middle of the offensive line because all the linebackers were chasing Corey Grant out wide, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's really good as a decoy. It's also good for drawing in a safety or keeping a cornerback down close to the line of scrimmage, anticipating having to make that tackle, and then a receiver getting behind that defensive back. But you've got to have a quarterback and a receiver who can make that defensive back pay. And so without, you know, a punishing running game up the middle and without a good quarterback-receiver tandem, the sweep by itself, it doesn't really threaten the defense anymore, you know? And so I think we've got to establish the more basic plays, the runs up the middle, they've got to be more devastating. the pass down the sideline from quarterback to receiver, that's got to be hit more consistently for the sweeps to start to get not ignored, but less focused on, and then the effectiveness will come back, I think. So hopefully we can see some of that this year.
So it's not about the player running the sweep so much as basically everybody else.
Yeah, I think so. You know, they've used a lot of different blockers on those sweeps. You know, sometimes they send two H-backs. I know there were plays where Prosh and Fultz or Prosh and Uzuma would both run out for, you know, and block for that. You'll have two guards doing. You'll have a guard and an H-back. They've used a lot of different combinations, but I think it's everybody else. The run play up the middle or the pass on the sideline, those have to be legitimate threats for the sweep to even, you know, for the sweep play to kind of get under the radar, if you will, the defense is thinking and what they're planning on. Yeah.
You know, it's you make a good point about the power game up the middle. You know, everybody says how Cam Newton was certainly, you know, once in a generation, once in a lifetime kind of player and all that. And that's certainly true. But I think that our offense was just about as effective toward the end of 2013 when it was the running back making those same sort of power runs up the middle that Cam used to. Because Trey Mason was able to do with as a tailback basically the same kinds of things. It seemed like to me, as somebody who's not an expert, as Cam. So is it not so much that, you know, the belief is that Gus needs a dual threat quarterback, but is it really just that he needs a legitimate breakaway threat going up the middle from any position?
Yeah. You've got to keep the defense from spreading out so much that they can cover everything. You know, the defense has 11 players and offense has, you know, 11 players as well. The defense is going to try to take a few of those players on defense and give them dual responsibility. And a lot of times that job comes down to the linebackers. The linebacker has to read runner pass very quickly And then if it's run, they have a certain run responsibility. If it's pass, they have a certain pass responsibility. And so offenses need to find out who those players are that have dual responsibilities and then pick on them, you know, have something in the offensive play that makes them think one thing and then go another direction. And, you know, running up the middle is a great way to make those linebackers pay, because you're gonna have, you know, times when you can throw the pass behind them, or you know, the, I mean, even the safeties, you know, a lot of these teams have started sending safeties down, making the 8 and 9 man boxes, so that, you know, the run game is just getting stifled and stifled. You've got to start making them pay elsewhere to make them back off of the run game. But you're right about, if you don't have a dominant run game, then they can just play the pass to begin with, because the defensive line is going to stop the run game by itself, and now your passing game doesn't work. So you really have to get your base plays running first. Your runs up the middle, you know, you might have heard of constraint plays, and those are the plays that you'll spring on a team so that to get them back to playing normal. So a defense doesn't want to play just base defense. It wants to really attack or really prevent something from happening. But you've got the offense is going to run their constraint plays, you know, these sweeps, different screens and draws, things like that, things that aren't their typical playbook, but they make the defense pay for playing out of position. And so once you make the defense pay, then you can go back to your strengths, your runs up the middle, your inside zone, power and counter, things like that. And but if you don't have the players, the running back, to do those base plays, well, then why is the defense going to even bother to really focus on those? So hopefully, yeah, a good running game. Javon Robinson, if he can stay healthy and stay out of trouble, he can be that guy, we hope. And if he's running well up the middle, then things will start to open up outside as the defense slowly starts to crouch back in towards the middle to stop that base play that Auburn likes to run.
Okay. I've got one more little follow-up on that, John, if you don't mind. This is fascinating stuff to me, and then I'll throw back to you. So one of the things I saw, that John sent me a couple of links to kind of brush up on some of your articles I'd read before, but to kind of look back and think about them now before we talk to you. One thing I thought was really interesting, you had a thing where you were showing how it may have been how we were passing or not passing successfully in the Iron Bowl last year. And you were showing how it seemed like, I mean, you were being kind of polite about it. Bless your heart, right? You were trying to be appreciate that. We all do, right? Appreciate that. But it seemed, reading between the lines, sort of, it seemed like you were saying that Jeremy wasn't doing his footwork right, and he wasn't choosing the right receivers to throw to, okay, among other critiques. So I guess my question is one that we've been bandying around on this show for months now, if not longer, which is Jeremy Johnson's lack of development an indictment on Gus Malzahn, the quarterback coach, and Rhett Lashley, the quarterback coach, you know, they both have, you know, something of that role in their portfolios, or is it a Jeremy Johnson thing and we just need to, you know, move on to the next person?
Every Auburn fan has been thinking about that for 8-9 months now, haven't we? I don't know that anybody's figured it out, because I always think of what Malzahn and company managed to do with Nick Marshall. I mean, he was only on campus for fall camp, and he's the starter game one. And no, he was not polished by any stretch of the imagination, but what they were able to do with him at quarterback is nothing short of amazing, you know, in that short amount of time. And if you fast forward to 2014 and how Nick Marshall played as a quarterback, not even just like this, you know, runner at the quarterback position, as a quarterback, he played very well. I mean, just look at how many yards he was able to rack up against Alabama in the Iron Bowl in 2014. He was a bona fide quarterback, you know. So Jeremy Johnson's shortcomings, you know, you definitely got to put some blame on the coaches the hype that they put on him, and I guess just the complete misunderstanding of what they had. But as far as the coach's ability or ability to coach a quarterback at all, I just don't buy that they don't have the ability to do it or that they're not good at it. They've done it in a very short amount of time. It just didn't work out with Jeremy Johnson for whatever reason.
John?
All right, so given that and the $64,000 question is, how do you see the 2016 offense shaping up? You know, who do you think the quarterback will be, and how do you think the offense will change? What changes should we look for?
Yeah, so if you think if you're like me and you think, wow, Malzahn did a really good job coaching Nick Marshall, then what's to stop him from doing such a good job with John Franklin III, right? So I'm kind of leaning that he'll be the one that wins the job just because he brings an extra dimension to the offense. Of course, if he can't pass worth a lick, then that removes a dimension from the offense. And that's passing as a whole is a big, big, big dimension of the offense. It's kind of necessary. So if the passing part doesn't work out, then he's a no go. But I'm leaning toward him being the answer. And if he's the answer, then I would expect to see basically variations on the 2013-2014 offense. It's leaning toward the 2013 version where it was so run heavy. I mean, we think we'll have the running backs of Kerryon Johnson and Javon Robinson. We think we'll have the quarterback that can run the zone read and maybe even do some of the pop passes, that sort of thing. We'll need to find a receiver that can take the top off of defenses, like Sammy Coates did so well. Whenever it was third and medium or long, and you needed to make a pass for a first down, it was Sammy Coates was the guy. So I think we're still not sure where that's going to come from. But if John Franklin III wins it, then I would completely expect to see that. Now, if Jeremy Johnson wins it or Sean White wins it, then, I thought I knew what last year's offense was going to look like. And I wrote, six or seven posts on, all the different sorts of passing concepts I thought Malzahn might incorporate based on his time in Tulsa. But now I'm hesitant to say anything about what it might look like if either one of them win. Not because I think it'll be terrible or anything. It's just, they tried things and they didn't work, and you just didn't really get a sense of what the offense was trying to do last year. They didn't have so much of an identity. And hopefully if one of those two, Jeremy Johnson or Sean White, win the job, the coaches will find the identity and it'll become apparent as the season goes. But, we'll just have to wait and find out if that's the case.
All right, what you said there made me think about a discussion that Van and I had a while ago about Gus, and his comments about not being a CEO, and your comments about the offense not having an identity make me think about him saying I was trying to be a CEO, and Van's comment about how the mad scientist needs to get out of the office and back in the laboratory. So, what do you think that means in terms of the offense, and how will we be able to tell if Gus has his hands on stuff in the offense?
Yeah, I'm sorting through that. I'm sorting out all of that right now. I had this plan before Gus made that comment about wanting to be a football coach, not a CEO. But what I'm doing is, or what I have done is, well, let me put it this way. When Gus first got to be a head coach in like 1991 or two or something like that, he had no idea what he was doing, like any first-time head coach. And so he bought a book called The Delaware Wing Tee, An Order of Football. Right. And it's basically the Bible of the wing tee from what I understand. And I've found a copy online. I've been reading it. And I'm actually starting on Tuesday of this week. I'm starting like a chapter-by-chapter breakdown of how a first-time head coach like Gus Malzahn might have, taken this and how we see the words in that book applied to Malzahn's offense today. And I'm with him saying, you know, I'm going to go back and be a football coach, I think it's the perfect time to look to those sorts of things. Because basically he's, you know, it's sort of like, you know, when I first became a head coach, I went and read this book and followed it word for word. Those are his words. He said, I read it, I followed it word for word. And so now he's going to go back and be not a CEO, but a football coach. And so the things that are said in that book, I think, are what we'll look for. And as I said, you know, over the next few weeks, I'll kind of get into what's in that book. It's more than just a playbook. It's more than just here's the wing T formation, and here's a few plays. You know, it's more than that. It's like, it's how to think about calling offensive plays. It's how to think about putting a defense in a bad spot and things like that. There's a lot on misdirection, putting multiple threats in the same play, combining backfield motions that look like they're going one way and offensive motions that go the other way. It's all about confusing the defense. And so if we start to see that sort of stuff come back into what the offense is doing, then you'll know that Gus has been back in the laboratory, as Van would put it.
You know, that's been probably the single most disappointing thing for me the last 3 or 4 years, I guess, aside from the declining win total, really, is the fact that when Gus came in, I was so excited because he ran the fastest offense in football, and it's all this super, you know, motion and brilliant ideas and trick plays are our offense and all that. And it seemed like every year we've gotten less fast, more slow, more predictable, more plodding, less exciting. It's like if you buy a Ferrari and you get it home, and every month when you go out to drive it, it looks more and more like a gremlin, you know? And I just don't understand. I mean, I guess he's felt like he's had to do that based on the constraints of personnel and playing in the SEC West and, you know, things like that. But, I mean, is there more to it, do you think, that's caused us to kind of regress back to, like, Pat Dye football away from 33rd century Star Trek football?
Yeah, I think part of it is playing in the SEC, and you know, especially the West, where the pressure has just got to be insane. You know, I know I just happened to come across, you know, a lot of people are talking about in the NFL with the added distance of their extra points now. Hey, why don't we just go for two every time? And someone said, well, Chip Kelly would be the one to do that, right? Well, it turned out he did the first year he was in the NFL. And the first time it failed, he just gave up on it, you know? And you got to think, there's something about trying something that's just a little crazy and it not work, and you just, you know, throw it out.
That's what Gus did. Remember, John, we talked about that.
You're exactly right. He did.
The first time it didn't work, we quit doing it, and we've never done it since.
Yeah, and so where did that go? Why did it happen? Is it really just a pressure to win thing? Is it risk aversion? Where does that come from? Because in preparing for, you know, this Wing T review, I wanted to see what was Malzahn like when he first, you know, had a football team to his own. And I've been reading a little bit, and like he would call these crazy trick plays, and they'd practice them like they were just normal offensive plays, so they'd be ready for it when it was time. And you see a little bit of that. I mean, last year against Texas A&M, they did, you know, the hide the little person play or whatever you want to call it. But where's the rest of it? You know, I mean, you think back to 2009, and I mean, there were reverses and, you know, end arounds and these like double passes and all kinds of crazy stuff. And I'm not saying you need that to win, or you don't need that to, you know, validate your offense or anything like that. But you've got to put some excitement in the team, and you've got to take advantage of the defense sleeping, you know, things like that. I mean, this stuff can work if you're preparing for it, and you know the first time it doesn't work doesn't mean you're dumb or that the play was bad. It's just the defense stops, runs up the middle half the time. So I mean, what's the big deal? You need to get back to what you love and what you like, and ways that you know can make a defense pay if they're not ready for it. So hopefully, him getting back to being a football coach and less a CEO, we can maybe see some more of that.
Oh, that would be great. You know, and that's a good answer too, is that's how you might know, is when things get a little more colorful again. I have to give, oh man, I thought about it and I wasn't prepared for it. John probably knows what I'm how hard can it be? I haven't got that many things on here. Well, phooey. Anyway, I have to give Kerryon Johnson credit. I can't ever find his little thing anymore. You know, I'm just going to have to say, instead of Kerryon Johnson sound effect, I'm just going to say,
well, we got a cage strong enough to hold an animal like you here.
Yeah, that's Kerryon. I give him credit because until he came along, John and I used to say that whenever they would run the Wildcat, you knew exactly what was going to happen, right? It was always a run up the middle.
Sure.
It seems to me like Kerryon Johnson is the first Wildcat quarterback that we've ever used that actually might do something other than run up the middle, even if it's run to the side, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was paying attention to that last year because it was, you know, nothing else was working, but hey, look at this cool Wildcat play, you know.
Got us some touchdowns.
Yeah, and so you're right. They probably, over the course of the season, they probably ran, I don't know, 7 or 8 different plays out of the Wildcat formation, which was nice to see. I think they tried even tried one pass. It was, you know, a failure, but, you know, that doesn't mean you have to stop trying it, right? So, hopefully some more Wildcat plays, some, like I was saying earlier, some more tweaks to the run game. If it is Jeremy Johnson or Sean White at quarterback and we don't have that quarterback run threat like we would possibly with John Franklin III, then I'd really like to see some more tinkering with the way the offensive line and H-backs block and, you know, some different ways of running, you know, in ways that can trip up a defensive line. There's a lot of options, traps and things like that, you know, that change the way the offensive line can block a defensive line other than just shoving the guy in front of you. Mm. And so hopefully we can see some more variety in that way at least.
Yeah. Oh, I found it.
Carry on my wayward son.
Can't talk about Carry On without hitting that button. All right. John, what else you got for War while we have him online here?
Well, I was going to say, I wanted to thank you for coming on. This has been awesome. But do you have any questions for us that you wanted to ask since you were here?
Oh, I didn't even think to come up with one.
It's okay.
Or do you have anything else that we haven't thought to ask you about because we're not the brightest folks in the world that you think we ought to put out there?
I'm going to ask, John, when are you going to get your own soundboard to combat Vans?
Listen, if we had dueling soundboards, everybody would stop listening to this podcast and be Van and I just going back and forth against each other. That would be absolutely not productive. But
if John and I started doing dueling soundboards, the audience would
smoke weed every day.
No, I don't need a soundboard. I just enjoy Van playing with it and he has fun with it. And so it's okay.
Very good.
He humors me. Is there anything, though, seriously, that you want to add, like, that we haven't touched on as far as, you know, thinking about the offense and where Gus might be going with it? And maybe, like, you know, here's a question. I don't know if you've thought about it, but Hugh Freeze is having a lot of success, and he's having a lot of success without a running game, really. What is he doing differently from Gus? How similar and how different are those offenses? It's not really fair of me to jump you with this, but you may not have even really thought about Ole Miss. But from what you do know, I mean, what do you sense between those two?
Yeah, I really wish I was able to watch more teams. I sometimes it feels like I barely have time to watch Auburn. But from what I know about Ole Miss's offense, they're reliant on a quarterback who can just fire the ball sideline to sideline, and they always have multiple receivers who are great have great hands, but they're able to break tackles and get yards after the catch. And I think a lot of what their offense is based on are short to intermediate passes, especially along the sideline, that spread defenses thin, you know, width wise. And then there's these seams that open up in the defense, and if a wide receiver can then break a tackle or two, then they've just got grass, you know. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of that has helped Ole Miss's offense be as good as it has been. They've also added the RPOs, the package plays. What I don't know. I don't ever know what to call those. There's about five different names for them. Sure. But they've really taken those, and that makes sense. They've got a quarterback, or they've had quarterbacks who can, you know, make quick decisions and fire the ball from here to there, you know, really, really accurately. And so that's a perfect application for that. Auburn has been much more offensive line and running back oriented. And that's the offenses are probably pretty similar in what they have in their playbook, you know, their full playbook. But on a year-to-year basis, you're going to focus on, you know, a couple dozen plays and really practice those plays. And that's where the separation has come. You're going to pick those dozen or two dozen plays based on the personnel you have and really focus on those. And that's where they're so different. You know, I can't see Auburn this year being the kind of team that has a quarterback who takes a snap in shotgun, scans the field from left to right real quick, and finds open receiver, and just, you know, just at the snap of a finger, you've got 5 or 10 yards. I don't see that in this year's personnel, but, you know, who knows? We got a huge crop of talented wide receivers this year, you know, that have signed. So, you know, in a year or two, if you get the quarterback who can facilitate the ball, you know, then maybe that's the way it would turn out, assuming Gus survives the year. You know, that's one thing I'm you know, I know that's one of your pet peeves, Van, is people rooting against Auburn so that they can be right about the you know, the hiring and firing of coaches. But I'm certainly rooting for Malzahn this year. I'm rooting for Auburn. So
certainly hope so. Well, my last little follow up to that, and I'll shut up for the night on this, is how good can this offense be if these stud wide receivers come in and really are as good as advertised?
If we get two really good receivers out of them, I think that would be amazing. I mean, we saw what, you know, nobody thinks Chris Todd is, you know, was the next Tom Brady or Peyton Manning or anything. He was just a guy, right? Mm-hmm. But Darvin Adams and Terrell Zachary turned him or were able to make it look like Chris Todd was, you know, one of the great quarterbacks in Auburn history. I mean, I think he had a few passing records for a year mm-hmm. until Cam Newton showed up, right? So, I mean, you get two really good receivers on this offense. I think, you know, they had Ben Tate, too, and a really good offensive line. So, you know, if our offensive line pans out and, you know, Javon Robinson, Kerryon Johnson stay healthy, then two wide receivers is all we need to really open this thing up, I think.
John, any last words?
No, I just wanted to thank David for coming. This has been great. I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Please go ahead.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for having me on. I think this is, you know, my fifth podcast ever or whatever. I'm not really a podcast guy, but your podcast is one of my absolute favorite ones. Oh. And I was such a pleasure to be on with you guys. Appreciate it a lot.
Well, thanks so much. I appreciate that. We try hard to make our silliness, and I mostly mean my silliness and John's actual intelligence, entertaining as best we can. We're kind of like the Auburn offense last year. We may not have, you know, the stud players every position, but we try to move the ball as best we can with what we've got. And having on somebody like you that really knows what they're talking about has been a treat. So we appreciate that.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
We'll let David roll along here. Let me see. I guess I'll just push this little button, David. Okay. John, you with me still?
I'm here.
Let's continue this big 18-wheeler rolling down the road here. We got about 15, 20 minutes left. Let's hit some of our other points. We've got various news going on. You know, I just want to say, though, before we get into our news, talking about some of what David was talking about there, you know, on a hot day, John, on a hot day, there's nothing quite like a tall, icy, cold glass of Delaware wing tea and an order of football. It just goes down well.
You're silly.
In the library. I didn't know you could get that. I thought you had to go to Toomer's Drugs or something to get that.
I do look forward to reading David's stuff about the wing tea. I think it'd be fascinating.
Oh, yeah. Let me put you this way. If you had told me an hour ago that I would be anxiously looking forward to reading about the Delaware wing tea, I would have said that you've been
smoke weed every day.
This is a pretty useful button. I'm finding all kind of uses for this button. But now I am seriously looking forward to learning about the Delaware freaking Wing T, man. I really want to know about it. Because I think it's...
And I say huge!
Yeah, it's huge. So, all right. Gus got a contract extension. Oh, wait, hold on. Tell us about the contract extension while I crack open my Delaware Wing T here.
Gus got a contract extension that somehow I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but it was basically it added a year to the contract, so it was longer than
I don't have facts to back this up.
He did get a contract extension, and I think it was more related to recruiting, where I'm sure it was a kind of thing where other schools were using it as a negative thing that he didn't have a longer than 4-year contract or whatever it was. And so they ran around and did an extension and gave him a raise, and that was good. And I'm happy for him. And he, you know, I feel like he's earned it, but you know, people were making a big deal about it. But it, the kind of thing is, if anybody's using anything like that in recruiting, then you have to go do this to take care of it.
Yeah.
And so to me, it wasn't a big story. It wasn't like they were like, we're going to give Gus a contract extension. You know, it was like, anything that could be used as a negative that you can deal with, you deal with it. And so they dealt with it.
Let me put to you this way, John, and listeners out there, think about this. Even if we struggle some this year between the schedule and questions at quarterback, rookie wide receivers, depth at running back, even with all that, you know, in front of us, if we struggle, I still feel very good about Gus simply because recruiting, and that's going to get us to our next topic, but recruiting is going so well for the future. And think about this, Auburn fans. Recruiting is going this well when Auburn fans are saying, out of fire, Gus, run him out of here. Even with all this talk about hot seat, right? Gus is on the hot seat. He's still pulling in a top 10 recruiting class every year. Think what he could be bringing in if you folks were actually supporting him, even in the down times. Think about that a little bit, Auburn fans, okay? He's pulling in these top 10 recruiting classes. We're going to be fine. We're going to be fine coming up. Don't you worry, because we'll get past this year. We'll have Woody. We may have Mond. Or we'll have, I can't think of his name, the 2018 quarterback, if that holds up. We're going to have plenty of great dual threat. We're not going to be sure which of our 3-, 4-, 5-star stud dual threat quarterbacks to run out there after this year. We just have to get through this year. Okay? So we're going to be fine. Recruiting is great. Did you see that story that just came out today where they went back and looked at all the coaches that have been hired since 2010 in Division I?
I did not.
Okay, somebody went back and did an analysis of recruiting at every program with a coach hired since 2010 who's had at least 3 seasons of recruiting. Because less than that, it's an aberration. You know, you come out and have 1 good year and, you know. So coaches hired since 2010 that have had 3 recruiting classes or more, out of all like 50 of them, where does Gus rank?
Probably first.
Fourth.
Fourth, okay.
Urban Meyer at Ohio State.
Okay, that's fair.
And then Jimbo Fisher at Florida State.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one other I can't remember. But fourth, and it was just by a little bit. That, I mean, the coaches under him are big names all over the country.
Sure.
Fourth, you're wanting to run off number 4 recruiter out of the last 6 years coaches hired. I mean, it just makes me crazy. You guys know. The myopia, it just makes me crazy. So, there you go. Is that Van's rant for tonight, as you like to say?
It is. We've got it. And so you were mentioning recruiting. There was some good recruiting news this weekend. Auburn got a commitment from a 2017 recruit named Austin Troxel,
yeah,
who's an offensive tackle from Madison Academy, which I believe is where Kerryon Johnson is from.
Yep, and the running back, the new running back.
Malik Miller.
Yeah.
And
what program did he grow up rooting for, John?
I don't know.
Alabama.
Well, it's good.
He just liked Auburn better.
Yeah, but I'm not counting on my chickens until they hatch.
Count that chicken.
Van, I don't get crazy and excited about recruiting until they sign on the dotted line.
Let's be fair. If there's a player that Auburn and Alabama are fighting over and they verbally commit to Auburn, that means there's a 60% chance they end up playing for Alabama.
So, again, we don't count our chickens until they hatch. And I know you're – but Auburn does have a lot of great commitments so far. I mean, Calvin Ashley's, you know, one of the top 10 players in the country probably is an offensive tackle out of Florida. So we have two great offensive tackles committed. We got a lot of other good players committed. We got the like the number one junior college athlete is committed. And I know you've been following the recruitment of this commitment that this quarterback that decommitted from Baylor Mond, and you're very excited about him. So that one's down to us and Texas A&M, and we'll see where that goes. But I know he's been in Auburn a couple of times meeting with the coaches.
Yeah, he had gotten it down. This is one of those weird things where, like, he was 100% Baylor, and then Baylor went to crap, and so he backed off. He looked at Ohio State, but they signed a guy that was as highly regarded as him, so that kind of took Ohio State out of the mix. That left Auburn, and Auburn was his leader, but then Texas A&M jumped in big. I don't know what they were waiting on, but they came in all hot and heavy, and he had a weekend there, and he decided even before he went that now they were in the running big time. So he spent this past weekend, this past weekend that I spent in Nashville, he spent it in Auburn. And word was that he had a great time, but he also had a great time at A&M, and he is now 50-50 with no leader. But they're expecting him to make a decision, at least a verbal commitment, in the next, I guess, few weeks, if not sooner. So that would be outstanding just because there's really not anybody else left on the board after him. It's we had Narcisse, you know, down in Louisiana, but of course LSU is determined to keep fitting round pegs into square holes at their quarterback position. So they're bringing him in to be the next dual threat quarterback to mess up after Brandon Harris. And it's they keep that tradition alive of not being able to run the offense. So we will see. Here's the irony is the offensive coordinator in Aggieland is former Auburn offensive coordinator Noel Mazzoni. And, you know, we know that he's a pretty smart offensive mind. I was always impressed with the schemes and the plans that he drew up. He's very creative and he uses his resources very well, I think. You know, remember we talked about him back in the 99 Iron Bowl. He was the one that drew up the plans where we had no running back. So we put Ronnie Daniels in motion from the tailback, single back spot, a diamond of four receivers on the opposite side. And what that meant was we actually came out in an illegal formation and we shifted into a legal formation at the snap, which I thought was hilarious. And then basically you had four receivers on one side, pick your poison, and that left Ronnie Daniels in single coverage on the other side. I thought that was a pretty nifty and shifting him out of the tailback spot, the single back spot, also exposed, you know, the defensive zone type man type thing too. So that was, I thought, was very creative. That was one of the more impressive offensive schemes I've ever seen put together in about a week. So you got to think that Mond went out there and Mazzoni sat down and said, "Look, I'm going to draw up all these cool pass plays. You won't have to run very much, and we'll get you in the NFL." Whereas Gus is like, you know, you'll be the next Cam Newton, and he's like, "Oh, you know, get banging around, banged up, beat up." You know, but on the other hand, he's got to think, I got these great wide receivers coming in that I'll be throwing to. There are two wide receivers at IMG Academy with him that may go where he goes. So we would get two more like four-star receivers if we get him. So this is the reason I've been watching it so closely is this is a huge potential deal. This is like a 3-for-1 deal, potentially. So A&M needs to back off is what I'm basically saying.
He'll go where's best for him and we'll be okay either way.
Well, sure, but it would be nice to have him and
sure
to win that battle regardless. Because you can't – I mean, look, I guarantee you one thing, and that is that in the next 3 or 4 years, at least one good quarterback will be transferring away from Auburn because you're going to have Woody Barrett, you may have Kellen Mond, and you'll have – I can't ever think of his name – the 2018 Cam Newton, right? Every year –
Tyler Queen? No.
He's like 11th grader right now, but he's 300. He's 250. He's Cam Newton.
I'm not worried about the guys who are committed, haven't signed at 17. You're talking about a guy at 18.
I'm making a point here, though, which is that we're going to, if we get all these guys, you can't play them all. So I'm saying if we get all these guys, we're going to lose one of them eventually because somebody's going to transfer when one of them becomes the starter. But I would much rather have the option of picking among them than having to settle for the one that we actually get and the others decide to go somewhere else. That's what I'm saying.
That's fair.
Sorry to drag you into the purgatory of 2018 recruiting there.
I'm not sweating 2018 recruiting. I'm going to say that. So, all right. And the reason we need continued recruiting, especially at running back, is Rock Thomas has transferred away and to last season's tormentor Jacksonville State.
Yeah.
So this is a big question in terms of running back depth, which you were already worried about before this happened.
Even before, because they weren't even using him at running back. It didn't even matter. Yeah, we've basically got one running back right now. And well, bit players.
He would have been great in that role, though. The third down back, kick returner role. He did fit that well, and I'm sorry to see him go. But I also think, I said on here before, I didn't trust him at times with the ball, and I don't think the coaches did either. So I think it's Javon Robinson and Kerryon Johnson show this year. Malik Miller is their backup. I think we'll see the fullbacks get more carries. Mm-hmm. Petway and Cox, especially on the inside runs, we're trying to run the clock out and that kind of stuff. So that'll be interesting. But
that's what lets me sleep at night, is knowing that we got those two big H-backs that could step in if absolutely necessary in, kind of in like a Tommy Tuberville putting in
Trey Smith
and the tight end as his fullback.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that we've got that, I mean, I don't know that Gus and Rhett would actually do it. They'd probably come up with some weird seven receiver formation or something. but they could do that. That makes me feel better. So,
all right. The Auburn women's softball team lost in the third game of a three-game series to Oklahoma.
That just shows you how long it's been since we've done a show. That seems like ancient history now, doesn't it?
It was like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, well, that's a long time ago in the hot and heavy media world that we populate, John.
But they had a great season again, and easily the most entertaining and exciting Auburn athletic team.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. I mean, I just can't say enough about their spirit and their fight and their determination, and I hope they serve as inspiration to every other program on the campus because, man, they never quit, they never gave up, and when they finally tasted defeat, it burned them up, and you could see that it just was under their skin. They couldn't stand it, and they're ready to turn around. Those that haven't graduated, ready to turn around, come back out next season, do it all again. And that's what you want in your athletic programs right there.
And another front, the men's basketball team, we were talking about recruiting earlier, currently has the number one recruiting class in the nation for next year.
And I say huge!
Woo-hoo! It's huge, man. How did that happen?
I think Pearl and them are great recruiters, and I think this is a great example of it. I think they know what they're doing in the recruiting department, and I think it was only a matter of time before they attracted, really great players to Auburn. And some of it is just things working out. Sometimes things happen. Austin Wiley.
Yeah.
Is the child of two former Auburn athletes. He was selected recently to be on the Team USA under 17 team to represent the United States.
That's Vicky Orr's son, isn't it?
That's right.
Oh, he's got to be good then. It was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
His dad was okay, but Vicky was the bomb, man. She was the team back in the 80s. Good heavens. Yeah, so as somebody pointed out, we'll be number one until the other teams add some numbers. Because right now, we've only got like two or three recruits, but they're all pretty high up. But once Duke or somebody starts getting in,
once Kentucky gets their four or five star players, then
we'll start dropping down. But let's enjoy it while we can. Heck yeah! So yeah, I mean, I kidded Pearl last season, but never about him so much as just that I just felt like the Auburn fan base was so willing to give him the benefit of the doubt and never give Gus the benefit of the doubt. And that just, I just resented that. I just felt like, you know, Gus loses a game. Everybody's like, oh, run him off. He sucks. Pearl loses like 10 games. They're like, oh, it's okay. He's got him rolling now, you know. Well, come on. You know, they both are great coaches. They're both going to do great. And I have nothing but good things to think about both of them. You sent in a question to Stuart Mandel and that other guy whose name I can never think of.
Bruce Feldman.
Yeah, I'll never think of Bruce Feldman's name. And you asked sort of something that ended up going a different way. So describe what you asked, and I actually have the answer for you that they failed to give. I just have to, my email. Oh, there it is. Okay.
All right. So if you listen to last week's podcast, the Audible podcast, which is Fox's podcast, college football podcast with Stuart Mandel and Bruce Feldman, they had a question from an Auburn fan last week, and that was me. And they didn't answer it in the way I wanted them to. They went off talking about Auburn fans and their propensity to want to fire coaches and stuff. But they started to answer a little bit of it. So this is the question that I asked. In their last podcast, they had referenced the level of patience of the non-Alabama teams in the West and saying they're all getting restless and described Auburn as having the Auburn bug and the least patience of any college football program. And I said, I'm not disputing that. I think events support that belief. And I see many Auburn fans are ready to fire the entire coaching staff today. So my question is the Auburn bug of 2016 hysteria-induced condition caused by the current dominance of Alabama and the fact that the only measuring stick for some is how well Auburn is doing in comparison to that program? Or have SEC defensive coordinators caught up to Miles Zahn and the poor job they did developing coaching quarterbacks in 2015 combined with the trajectory of the program mean that the coaching staff should be fired for non-Alabama-related reasons? So the basic question is this. Is Gus Malzahn still an excellent football coach? Could anyone else at Auburn have hired do any better in this division at this point?
And they didn't answer that question at all.
Well, they started out for a long time talking about Auburn fans and went back firing coaches and Tuberville and all that kind of stuff. But then they came back to it and they talked about two things. One is the lack of development of quarterbacks. And the other one is – and they Stuart Mandel did say – Gus Malzahn, and I think they both said this, Gus Malzahn is an excellent football coach. And
they said about the same thing Warren Eagle just said.
Yes. So, you know, I think, in their mind, the idea that Auburn would fire him is kind of inconceivable because right. They see him as an excellent football coach and stuck in a really, you know, who's recruiting very well and stuck in the toughest division in the history of college football. So. Right. So what's your answer?
Well, here's the actual answer. Okay. Because what they did was proceed from the assumption that in the years that Alabama is down, that Alabama and Alabama fans acknowledge that fact and actually talk like fans of a program that is down. What they fail to understand is that Alabama fans are so delusional and so wrapped up in their own sense of grandeur that they never acknowledge their program is down. Even when Tuberville was beating them 6 years in a row, Tuberville beat them 6 years in a row, and if you'd gone out on the street and stopped 10 Alabama fans, 9 would have said, well, we beat them last year. We beat Auburn last year. Oh, I'm sure we've beaten them more often than they've beaten us the last 3 or 4, 5, 6 years. Sure. They cannot... You know, it's like when Bill Maher talks about one political group being in the bubble and they can't hear reality. Alabama fans are in the biggest bubble ever. They are completely divorced from reality. Alabama fans are completely in their own universe where they never lose and there's only one other team, Auburn, and they're always perpetually better than Auburn, and Auburn is completely in last place and sucks. And if we ever win anything, we must be cheating. That's the world they live in. And you guys all know exactly what I'm talking about. And see, since these reporters are outside that bubble, out in the world, they don't get it. But the problem is that many, many Auburn fans have to live too close to the bubble. And so they get that radiation poisoning from the bubble and start not believing or thinking like the people in the Bama bubble, but a little bit. You know, they start getting warped a little bit. They can't help it. God bless them. Who? I feel nothing but bad for them. I used to live in that bubble or near next to that bubble too. I get it. I totally get it. But it starts to warp your thinking to where there's only two programs, Alabama and Auburn, and you're either number one or you're number last, and there's nothing else. So you are absolutely right that it is the measuring stick of comparing Auburn only to our cross-state rivals that makes us so impatient, and I have said that many times. But Alabama's incessant talk gets in the heads of many Auburn people, and we end up believing we have to be much better than our historical median just to be competitive with them over time. Nothing highlights this better, John, than the absolute conviction with which most Alabama fans hold the conviction that they have a winning record against us since the beginning of Pat Dye's tenure. They do not. But I guarantee you, you ask 100 Alabama fans who has a winning record against who since 1981, and 99 of them will say Alabama easily has a winning record over Auburn. So because the Alabama fans are so adamant about that, it makes Auburn fans start thinking that same way. Does that make sense to you?
It does make sense to me.
And so we just are so quick to push the ejector seat button because we've got to have somebody that can make us number one and not number last.
I like the bubble and the radiation analogy.
Yeah. You know, when I typed Alabama's incessant talk into iOS when I was first composing this, it kept auto-correcting it to Alabama's incest attack.
Okay.
And I mentioned that on Twitter, and somebody said, and? editorial before we get to our last thing, which is questions, and we got to get out of here, I know.
Yep.
Alabama's two players that were arrested for drugs and carrying stolen guns, okay? They will have no charges from the district attorney because he doesn't want to, quote, ruin their lives when they've been out working in the hot sun and he's been in with an air conditioner. That's a direct quote. And I just want to say this. We have got to get past this culture. Criminals have their lives ruined by the authorities. Criminals ruin their own lives. The authorities simply administer justice, John.
I think that's fair. And I think my feeling is this. If he acts that way with every young man or young woman who is arrested for a nonviolent crime in his parish in Louisiana, then I'm fine with that. However, if these two gentlemen got different treatment because of who they are and money under the table and all that kind of stuff, then I have a real problem with it. And, you know, this wasn't a, you know, nickel and dime, blah, blah, blah thing. This was a felony arrest.
Absolutely. It was. So, the key word. Not is, was.
Well, and I'm going to be clear about what he said. It's not that they weren't arrested, and it's not that there's a lack of evidence or that the charges were dismissed. This is the prosecutor choosing not to pursue the case in court. That's what happened here today. So that's all.
Talk about a scam. There's your scam.
No, I mean, that happens all the time with other people in different situations. Sometimes it's, you know, there are other things going on and there's a deal made or whatever, but anyhow.
It's pretty rough. All right. We need to really quickly mention Lorendo. I mentioned it at the top, but if you haven't got this book yet, Ken Ringer's Lorendo, the biography of the great Auburn assistant coach to Shug Jordan. Fantastic story. World War II hero, NBA player, Auburn assistant coach, just an amazing guy, like the Doc Savage of assistant football coaches. You need to pick that up. Go to Amazon.com. We're revamping the White Rocket Entertainment website, and I'm going to have stuff like this on there where you can just go to our site and get everything, get the podcast, get the books, get everything. So, you know, click over to the Facebook page and the Twitter group and all that. So, but yeah, be sure to check that out if you hadn't.
Absolutely. It's available at bookstores in the Auburn area, the Auburn University Bookstore, J&M, and Lorendo is the name of the book by Ken Ringer. And there's some really good stuff about, we talked about offensive football tonight. There's a lot of good stuff about his time as offensive coordinator at Auburn, both coaching, you know, Pat Sullivan and Terry Beasley, and then also coaching some of the other teams, you know, the Amazons team and some other Auburn offensive teams, and what he thought about Auburn about offensive college football and how he was influenced by being, you know, one of the early players who was actually a great player with the ball in his hands at college. So
fantastic book. We have any questions?
We got a couple questions real quick. Our first is from Emily Rios.
Yay!
Who emailed us at auwishbone@gmail.com and said, she said she didn't, she know, she's not sure if we listened, and there's a podcast called Podcast Ain't Played Nobody by with Bill Connolly and Stephen Godfrey, and I've listened to that. It's really good. I like Bill's work a lot. And on their last episode, they had the idea of reformatting the SEC into pods instead of west or east, and we'd have three or four permanent rivals, and then basically everybody else would rotate. So you'd see all the other teams much more quickly. And actually, I think our guest tonight, David Warren-Meagle, had put out something like this a couple of years ago, based on an idea that one of the ACC writers had put out for the ACC. And I love this idea, and I know you would love this idea, because we would see all the other teams much more often.
Absolutely.
You know, we don't need to be permanent opponents with, you know, Mississippi State or whatever. It could be, you know, Alabama and Georgia and one other team, and then we could rotate everybody else and see, you know, Tennessee, Florida, Missouri much more often than we're seeing them now.
Absolutely.
They will never do it, though.
No,
because they're conservative, and the TV networks like it the way it is too.
Yep.
In terms of, you know, is it feasible? I don't think they would ever do it. I love the idea as a fan. One of their things they said is Auburn versus Georgia shouldn't be a rivalry anymore in that setup, and I said, And finally, she had this really good question, and she said, I've been thinking a lot about where we'd be if 2013 had never happened. I would never change that regular season for anything, but I know I'm still absolutely crushed by the way the season ended, so maybe I'm just not ever going to be over it. But if Gus had won six games that year, do you think the unhappy fans would be happier with him? At that point, he'd have brought him back from three wins to a steadier 6 to 8 wins each season, and we could conceivably be building Auburn to its next great iteration. Did beating expectations so greatly in that first year ruin him for the following years?
That's the Terry Bowden effect we talked about. The thing is, Terry wasn't recruiting, and you knew it was just going down, 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 whereas Gus is recruiting so well that I have no doubt this is a blip and it's going to go back up, up, up. I totally get that question. I do, but I think that if he'd won 6 games the first year, and then 9, and then 7, people would still have him on the quote-unquote hot seat because he would need to get double digits. I feel like it'd be a different number they're looking at for this year, but Auburn fans at this point, they look at Alabama winning 13 games a year, 14 games a year, whatever, and they just feel like Auburn should be right up there right next to that. That's not our – it's like I said a minute ago, it's not our historic median. It's not what we've ever been. I'm sorry that, you know – we are so determined that's what we're going to be, but and I hope that we can be. God, I would love that. I wish we could just dominate, but there's just been a couple of runs, you know, where we did that. So we've come awfully close to kind of sustaining it. We just never really have. So I think it would be a different situation, but it wouldn't be that different. How do you see it?
It's interesting. I wonder if the perception would be there wouldn't be so much pressure on Gus because they wouldn't have gotten so much spotlight and hype early on. So I think getting, you know, having things go great and then having them go worse is when people get unhappy. If you're building and people see improvement. But I think regardless of what happened in 2013, if last season happened the way it did, people are going to be unhappy because there was some bad football.
Well, people were mad at Pat Dye after 84. We had gone 5 wins and then 9 wins and then 11 wins. And then in 84, we went back down to 9. And people are like, rah, 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 rah. And the next year we won 8. You better believe there was pressure on Pat Dye after 1985. 8 wins. After 11-9, we won 8. After that Texas A&M bowl game loss, he was having ulcers. He couldn't sleep. He was having hives. There was so much pressure on him. It's just that's just the nature of the job at Auburn. You're in the SEC West to begin with. You're in the SEC. You got Alabama down the street. I mean, you know, it's there's just nothing comfortable about it, honestly.
That's fair. All right, our next question is David Smiley, who's at DM Smiley, who says, you ever feel bad about wishing the summer will hurry up and end? Like when I was little, I hoped the summer would last forever.
Yeah, I know what he means. It's like you're wanting summer to get by so we can get back to football. And there, you know, there was a time when I was a kid that I didn't want summer to end because I didn't have to go to school. But, you know, we have jobs now, so the summer is no different from any other season except it's hotter and there's no football. So, yeah, I don't like summer nearly as much as I used to. I much prefer fall now. What do you think?
No, I do. I mean, I do look forward to fall, but I don't want to rush summer through. I'm going to enjoy it while it's here, and fall will be here soon enough. And so you need to savor the appreciation, enjoy, you know, go read a preseason magazine.
There you go.
Go read the Wing T article when it comes out. Listen to some podcasts. You know, fall will be here before you know it, and it'll be, you know, be going 100 miles an hour. So get everything else done while you can before fall gets here.
Yeah. Yeah, and we got to get it going because we've got July and a little bit of August, and we got to get our barbecue shows in, previews and everything. So we're going to be doing that in the next week. We're going to have big shows coming up, big shows in the weeks to come. So stay tuned to the Wishbone. John, I think it's about time to get on out of here.
Amen.
All right. Our time is up well and truly, and we hope you've enjoyed this show tonight. We thank you for yours. All I got to say is War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
So what becomes of
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Very good. Go to bed.